Americas, live and underway here on ESPN alongside checks notes. That's not Hercules Gomez. Alejandro Moreno. I am Sebastian Salazar for episode 341 of this show. Ale, great to have you with us. And look, it's not a Venezuela jersey, but it's some vino tinto for you. Just for you, huh?
Okay. Well, I suppose I appreciate the vino tinto, but I didn't know what to do because you guys wear all these trendy t-shirts and jerseys. And you know, Seb, I'm a lot of things, but I'm not a trendy tight t-shirt sort of guy. So I'm just going to stick to myself. Mm-hmm. Just a simple guy that I am. Straight up white polo. Mm. The opposite of Hercules Gomez.
Yeah, he would have like a oversized floral print shirt going on right now. So you've brought some much needed, I think, sobriety to the program. We're going to talk to
a little bit of class,
which we could always benefit from here on Football Americas. A little bit later in the show, we're going to hear from Allie Krieger. She's going to help us recap the weekend that was in the NWSL. Also talk about the big story over in England with Emma Hayes. We're going to hear from Ricardo Pasquel as well. He's the president of York United in the Canadian Premier League. Don't forget, we got a Premier League in Canada as well. But Ale, we got to start the show with a review of the weekend that was for U.S. men's national team players in Europe. And it was once again a great, great weekend abroad. Let's start with Haji Wright in the championship. His 14th league goal of the season on Friday as Coventry beat Huddersfield Town 3-1, Ale.
Carrying the momentum. We saw the sort of impact that he had with the United States men's national team last week. And to be honest with you, the guy just keeps scoring goals. And if he keeps scoring goals, I don't know how you keep him off the starting lineup for the United States men's national team.
Well, this guy might have a say in that. Josh Sargent, with his 14th league goal of the season, also came on Friday, also came in the championship as his Norwich City won 2-1, Ale, over Plymouth Argyle.
So I'm guessing Haji Wright is saying, well, I suppose the reason that I'm not in the starting lineup is because Joe Sargent is also scoring goals. However, the question for Joe Sargent is, can he stay healthy? And if he does, he will give Haji Wright a run. Or maybe it's Florian Malagon. Yes, I knew you were going to bring him up.
You know me all too well. A couple of goals, not one, but two, and off the bench, okay. Ale, as Monaco won 5-2 over Metz.
Okay, this is what we're paying attention to. The goal, not the goalkeeper.
That's a my kind of range. That's a my kind of range goal,
so.
Ale. Is this one any better? This one more to your taste?
Oh, yeah, but they're both from my kind of range. Let's be honest. They're both from my kind of range. He needs goals, though, and he needs some confidence. He wasn't all that great in the call-up with the national team. He didn't have a whole lot of momentum coming in or going out, so it's important for him to score some goals.
Seventh and eighth league goals of the season. How about Christopher Lund playing in Serie B with Palermo? A goal here for the left back, Ale.
Okay. Now we're really going deep. We're going deep to find his goals. The old Christopher Lund shout-out.
Christopher Lund. Getting some love on Football America. So does Tyler Adams, who got the start. Played the full 90 and was voted man of the match for Bournemouth in a critical 2-1 victory over Everton. Big 3 points there for Bournemouth, the Cherries, up to 13th in the Premier League table. Let's hear from a very happy Tyler Adams after his performance in the win.
Yeah, no, it's a great feeling, obviously, to play at home in front of our home fans and have that support. It's been a long time coming, so I'm happy to get the 3 points and be able to help and influence the team today.
Yeah, to come back with, for 90 minutes as well, that's a real achievement after just coming back from injury.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it's been a long time going, but the progressions that we've had over the past, what is it now, 20-something weeks has been slow and steady. We've done it in a really progressive way and in a smart way. So even playing this full 90 today, I felt great. We'll see how it goes on Tuesday now. But, yeah, we've been smart throughout the whole process.
All right, Ale, so who had the best weekend, as it were, of the Americans abroad? And I'm guessing you're not going to go with Christopher Lund since you disrespected his work in Serie B.
I did not disrespect his work. I just wasn't expecting that Christopher Lund was going to get a shout out. Mm-hmm. I thought there was going to be a mention of Christopher Lund. So, yeah, I was a little surprised. So let's just say that I'm not taking him into consideration. Hey, great goal. So be it. I'm moving on. In terms of who had the best weekend, we knew Haji Wright was scoring goals. We knew that Joe Sargent had been scoring goals. Balogun, I suppose it was a big weekend for him. But honestly, it has to be Tyler Adams. And he's not involving goals or anything like that. He's not scoring in bunches, but he's getting through 90 minutes. Hey! Yes! Yes! USA, baby! He's getting through 90 minutes of quality where he was impactful for his team, where you saw his role as organizing that midfield, providing the midfield with energy. It was useful work for him, useful work for the team, gets a result, man of the match. Tyler Adams continuing the momentum in his performance against Mexico in the Nations League. And so, look, I think it's all positive here for Tyler Adams. And oh, by the way, is somehow we're going to give a shout out to Greg Berhalter, who was resting him, who was saving him from himself in the semifinal of the Nations League. He was saving those legs, not only for the final, but also now so that he can perform for Portland. Everybody's happy. Tyler Adams had a great week, great goal in the Nations League final, and continues to do that. Well, I got to say, it's impressive for him to be back. It's important for him to play 90 minutes and to get through 90 minutes without injury. I think it was a huge, great, productive weekend for Tyler Adams.
Yeah, the 90 minutes is especially impressive, Ale, when you consider the 45-minute limit that he had over the international window. It's funny, right? When you talk to, like, U.S. fans, Ale, I feel like there's a pretty consistent opinion of who Tyler Adams is as a player and kind of where the American fans rate him. Maybe here you can give us a little bit of a different perspective, because I feel like when we talk to people maybe outside that American bubble, the opinion on Adams is a little bit more divided. How do you rate him?
I think Tyrell Adams is an important player to the United States men's national team. I'll say that much. And that's, I suppose, as positive as I'm going to be regarding Tyler Adams. He gives his team energy. I'm talking about the national team. Energy, personality, a presence through the midfield, a sense of leadership. That sometimes that sense of leadership goes missing for this national team. And I think his role is very important and very critical to that and to Greg Berhalter. In terms of what he is as a player, look, I think it's important to recognize that there are certain limitations to his game. And while he has a good engine and while he has great personality, and yes, he can communicate the game and he seems to be able to communicate that with his teammates as well and has good rapport with his teammates, there are certain things that he doesn't quite bring to the field consistently. Size is a problem in that position. I think that can be an issue, and it's not something that is his fault, but it's when you consider about playing against some of the best opposition, not in CONCACAF, but beyond CONCACAF, you're going to find that guys in those sort of positions, usually you're talking about a brick house. Tyler Adams is not a brick house. He is not. That's not his strength. That's not what he does best. So physicality can be an issue. At times, I think that even though he can cover ground, there's a lack of athleticism when guys run off his shoulder. And so that positioning that I was just talking about becomes increasingly more important, because if he's unable to recognize the spaces around him and athletically cannot quite stay with guys that make runs out of the midfield, just put it to you this way. And this is a mismatch for most people around the world, not just Tyler Adams. But say like a guy like a Jude Bellingham running out of the midfield. Is Tyler Adams tracking that run and actually getting there and winning a challenge? Well, no. But is Tyler Adams good enough to do that in CONCACAF? Yes, because you don't have that kind of physicality at that sort of level. So there are limitations to his game. Regardless, I still think that he's critical to the success of the national team.
All right, so you've gone with Tyler Adams as for who had the best weekend. I'm going to go with the player that you kind of suggested but didn't end up choosing, and that's Phelerin Balogun. And that's, Ale, basically down to the need, right? Obviously, Tyler Adams needed 90 minutes. I'm not disputing that. But, man, Balogun needed goals. We can talk about what just happened in the international window, right, where I think he came into that window number one in the depth chart, and I think you can argue that he left it maybe second, maybe third. And then if we look at his club form, Ale, beyond that, before he scored these two goals, he basically had one league goal, in the last 3 months. That is ice cold, and I really questioned whether he could catch fire or not. Now, the one thing here is these goals didn't come in a start, and that's what you got to see from Balogun. We want to see him starting. They do come off the bench, but Alex, this guy fights for more playing time with club, which will eventually maybe allow him to get back to that number one spot in the depth chart with the national team. He's going to need performances like this. And I don't think you can overstate just how big a brace is for a guy who scored basically once in the last 90 days of league play.
Critically important. For a forward, you need to see that ball going in the back of the net. And sometimes what it takes is sort of that fluky goal that he scored, that is more about the goalkeeper doing shakastrophic things rather than Balogun. Balogun is just pressuring the goalkeeper, and the goalkeeper says, here you go. You need some charity? Here is some charity, buddy. Go on and score a goal. It's important for him to, yes, to get starts. But in order to get starts, you got to score goals with consistency. The two goals will help. But to your point about what his status is with the national team, I'd argue that, yeah, he may have come in as one. He may have slipped all the way to three. But the truth is that that position is not all that well defined. Mm. So you could be three today. You could be number one tomorrow. That's how quickly the situation changes with the center striker position with the national team, because nobody has said, that is mine. Give it to me. Give it to me. It's mine. I'm not giving it away, whether it's because of injuries or lack of productivity or inconsistency. You think that you have a number one and the number one disappears. And so next guy up, you think that that's going to be the number one and he disappears. So until somebody actually grabs a hold of this position and consistently performs at a high level, both with club and country, we're going to continue to have this conversation.
How big of an issue is it, though, Ale? Could you make the argument that it's actually a good thing that there's so many choices? Or does the U.S., as we've discussed many times on this show, desperately need to find that guy that's going to be the centerpiece to the attack ahead of course, Copa America this summer, but you got a little bit more time until the next World Cup?
Well, I'll ask you, Seth, right? Wouldn't you rather have a guy, the one that you know, instead of actually going into a tournament, searching and hoping? This whole idea that they're just competing and making each other better, no. No, right? Norway knows who their number one is. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to make it to the Euro, because they have all sorts of other issues with that team. But they know Erling Haaland is going to play. They know that that's the guy. I'm just giving you the best example in terms of a well-defined striker that you know, if he's healthy, he's going to play. Well, give me the guy, not a bunch of, he could be the guy. He could be the guy today. He could be the guy tomorrow. But we're not quite sure. Mm. And if Berhalter had a choice, he would like to have this position well-defined and say, you know what, we always talk about down the spine of a team, to know full well that if I need a goal, if this team needs a goal, who am I looking to, and who's going to be that guy that gives us the best chance to score that goal? The United States right now is still searching for that. Nations League, it was Hadji Wright, but it was supposed to be Balogun, and then this week Balogun scores a couple of goals, so maybe he's going to be the guy. And Josh Sargent, when he's healthy, maybe he's the guy. You know why there is no guy? Because none of these guys have proven to be consistently the best option.
Ale, do you have a favorite in the bunch? I mean, they all have kind of different strengths, different qualities. We've seen some succeed at club, others do very well with the national team. Of kind of those four main competitors, do you have a guy who you would put your bet on if you were betting on it?
I'm not betting on this guy. But I would say right now, in terms of performance, in set quality of performance and thorough performances, I would say Hadji Wright has been better than everybody else. Balogun, I think there's a lack of confidence there right now that is very clear to see. As for Josh Sargent, I have questions about whether he can stay healthy. And this goal that he's scoring, while impressive, can he carry that form to the national team? And we just haven't seen that very consistently.
Yep. All about staying healthy. A very, very interesting race for the number nine. Time to run it back now here on Football America. As we've talked about all the great achievements of the weekend, now the not so great. Let's start in Der Klassiker, where Alphonso Davies and Bayern Munich lost 2-0 against Borussia Dortmund. This game in Munich on Saturday. The result leaves Bayern 13 points back of Bayer Leverkusen, so the league is all but dusted, assuring us we'll have a new Bundesliga champion for the first time in what, 12 years. As for Alphonso Davies, he started, played 84 minutes, was replaced late by Eric Choupo-Moting. Bayern Munich second in the league, Borussia Dortmund fourth. It was actually a really big win for Borussia Dortmund as they chase the Champions League spots there in the Bundesliga. So that was the afternoon affair in the Bundesliga on Saturday. Earlier in the day, we had the big game with Bayer Leverkusen. Now, we were keeping an eye on the Bayer Leverkusen game, one, to see what it would mean for Der Klassiker, but also because we got our guy coaching in it, Pellegrino Matarazzo. That's right, the American in charge of Hoffenheim. And actually, Hoffenheim was up in this game. They scored a goal in the 33rd minute, but as Bayer Leverkusen have done, and I mean this, many, many, many times this season, they came from behind. They got a goal in the 88th minute from Robert Andrich, and then the 91st minute from Patrick Schick. Bayer Leverkusen now 23 wins, 4 draws, 0 losses in Bundesliga play this season. As we mentioned, in first place, running away from Bayern Munich with the title. As for Pellegrino Matarazzo and Hoffenheim, they currently stand 9th in the Bundesliga for the American fans. No John Brooks in this game for Hoffenheim. All right, let's go from Germany to the Eredivisie, where you did not expect to see PSV losing. No, 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 no. And they did lose 3-1 to NEC on Saturday. PSV, this is their first league defeat of the season. That's through 27 games played. And it's actually their first Eredivisie loss in 42 games. Sergiño Dest started, played the full 90 for PSV. Chucky Lozano started, came off as a sub. Malik Tillman and Ricardo Pepi both appeared for PSV off the bench. Despite the defeat, PSV still first in the table with a 7-point lead over Feyenoord, the defending Dutch champions. 7 games left to go in the Eredivisie season, which, just like the Bundesliga, you can watch right here on ESPN+. All right, Ale, let's get to the negative. Who for you had the worst weekend of this bunch?
Well, first of all, let me just ask this question, given the fact that I don't participate in Football Americas all that often.
As much as you like.
Well, I don't get the invite. What can I do? Yeah, you don't invite me, I don't know what to do. PSV, are they the de facto Football Americas all-star national team?
The CONCACAF all-stars, we call them. Yes, yeah.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure.
And they did quite well for themselves, huh? A little trip to the knockout round of the Champions League, fueled by that CONCACAF fire, Ale.
Okay. Right. And because I don't want to mess with Full America and the vibes of Full America, I'm not going to be negative with PSV. I am indeed going to be negative with Alfonso Davies and Bayern Munich. And I suppose that I could focus on Alfonso Davies and his performance, which was lackluster and underwhelming. I can also tell you that that has been a way that you can describe his whole season. Lackluster and underwhelming. I don't know whether he's too concerned or too tied up or distracted with his contract situation, whatever his future may be with Bayern Munich or somewhere else, but we just haven't seen at any point this season the best of Alfonso Davies. And actually what we have seen from him, instead of progression, we have seen regression from Alfonso Davies. He has taken his game, instead of trending in the upward direction, he's actually gone the other way. Now, I'm talking in the totality of the season and not specifically to this game, but this game was yet another example. Missing a chance with his right foot that looked poorly taken, to say the very least. And honestly, I think Alfonso Davies and Bayern Munich, they are sort of parallels of each other in terms of what the performance was like against Borussia Dortmund. Lifeless, without a whole lot of personality, not a whole lot of character, not a whole lot of commitment, not a whole lot of work rate, not from Davies, not from Bayern Munich. There was no intensity, no urgency whatsoever in their Klassiker, which is supposed to be the showpiece event for Bundesliga. Only one team on the field was interested in pushing the tempo and pushing the energy and providing that sort of commitment and the work rate. That was Borussia Dortmund. From Alfonso Davies' perspective and Bayern Munich, not so much. They did not show up.
Ale, you mentioned the kind of constant transfer rumors around Alfonso Davies and Real Madrid. If you were in his camp, right, if you were advising him, would you tell him now's the time to go to Real Madrid, or would you advise him to stay in Bayern Munich? Because it sounds like you don't necessarily see his game progressing in the way you would assume that you would see from a player who was getting ready to make that jump to a club like Real Madrid.
Yeah, I don't see him as being ready to go to Real Madrid. And mind you, when I say that, he is at Bayern Munich. And at times when he has played at his best with Bayern Munich, and I think I'll go back to last season and the season before in particular, you have seen a player that was giving the signs as if his game was going to take off, as if his game was going to go somewhere else entirely, and we were going to see the trend going in the right direction. And that hasn't been the case. The progression just hasn't been there. The progression has flattened out. And honestly, in looking at Alphonso Davies and evaluating his performances, objectively, he hasn't been good for a long time. He hasn't been good for Bayern Munich for a long, long time. It's not just this past weekend. It's not just because of the injuries. Even before then, his decline and the presence of Thomas Tuchel all sort of happened right around the same time. But even before then, towards the end of the Julian Nagelsmann experience, he was already trending in the wrong direction, and he hasn't been able to recover that level of play. Now, that's true of Alphonso Davies, and that's true of a lot of players at Bayern Munich. The situation in Bayern Munich hasn't gotten any better. But for Alphonso Davies in particular, if he's thinking about Real Madrid, I just don't see it. If I were advising him, which was your question, I took the cynic route to get to the answer, but if I were advising him, I would say to Alphonso, listen, buddy, come here, buddy. Come here. Complete a 5-yard pass first. Then complete a 10-yard pass first. And then once you build a little bit of confidence, then find yourself in the attacking half, where you can do a lot of good work and utilize your speed. Guess what? You're one of the fastest guys around. Utilize the speed. Simplify your game. Kick the ball past the defender and run and put crosses into the box. And once you get confidence doing that, now you can add yourself into the attack and be a credible outlet down the left-hand side. And once you do that, maybe now you're an option inside the 18-yard box. But the first thing that you have to do is change the mindset. And the mindset has to be, you got to focus on what you're doing with Bayern Munich right now, not what may be with Real Madrid next year. You don't know if that's actually going to happen, so you might as well focus in the now, in this moment, in every training session, in every game. Do that first, and then we'll talk Real Madrid.
All right. So, Ale, very clearly they're going Alphonso Davies and Bayern Munich as our big losers on the weekend. I am going to go against PSV, the CONCA All-Stars, because they lost. Ale, and they were chasing history, right? Now, to me, the big thing here is how many teams get to win a league unbeaten, right? Like, every year you got teams winning leagues, but to win your league unbeaten is something historic. It lasts 10 years. It lasts 20 years. And for them to go 27 matches and lose to a team, you know, this isn't Feyenoord. This isn't Ajax. This is a team in sixth place. So I think from a team standpoint, yes, PSV has had a great season. They're going to win some hardware. They're not going to blow the league here. But it's disappointing to lose that shot at history. And then the individual performances. Again, Ale, I'm going back to the international break and trying to think of, you know, who needed something here? Ricardo Pepi came off the bench. He could have used a goal in this game. Didn't get it. Malik Tillman played in this game. You know, he got a start at the number 10 for the U.S. over the international break. Didn't necessarily impress. He could have used a good performance. Sergiño Dest started in this game. I don't think he needed too much from it. But the one guy who got a start in this game, who I thought surely coming off the international window, where he got benched, would be fired up to play and to not just play, but produce, which is what's been missing from Chucky Lozano's game for basically the last year and a half, would be Chucky Lozano. And he gets the start. And against, again, opposition that is not world-beating opposition, he fails to produce. So my worst performance, yes, it is for PSV. They're still going to win title. But I got to say, Ale, in the long list of kind of like disappointing Mexican players at the moment, and it's a guy who I love to defend because I love me some Chucky Lozano, or maybe I should now say I loved me some Chucky Lozano. He's a guy who every time he gets the opportunities, man, right now, Ale, he's just not producing. And it's very sad to see. And from a Mexican national team perspective, it's a big deal.
Oh, man. You're hanging on to that CONCACAF Nations League, aren't you? You haven't been able to turn that page. You haven't.
And those I said hurt. You know it hurt, Ale.
Now, can I ask you this? Which, I wasn't here for last weekend's episodes, in which I assume you talked a lot about the United States beating Mexico. Did you really see it as possible, following the United States' performance against Jamaica, that they would dominate the game in the manner in which they did against Mexico in the final. Was that even in play as a possibility? Because let's be honest, the United States got lucky. Mm-hmm. Got lucky. Mm-hmm. Got lucky. You said Malik Tillman got the start. Yeah, he was out there. He had a couple of long runs. But none of the performances in that game would have suggested that that same team, just a couple of days later, would be beating Mexico in the manner in which they did.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. To be fair, though, it wasn't exactly the same team. There were five changes from that semifinal to the final, and I think those changes made a big difference. And let's be honest, USA right now just has Mexico's number. Like, you can see it, Ale, and I wonder if you've ever been part of a rivalry like this. Not only do the American players know that they have control of the rivalry, they know they're better, and it seems like that has also kind of crossed over to the Mexican side of this rivalry. There's just a massive gap between these two. Yes, on paper, we said it last week, Mexico is not the team that they used to be, and they're much worse than the United States. But there's like a mental gap between these two countries, Ale, that frankly never existed before, certainly not for like an American advantage. It's clear now. Mexico almost feels like they play these games and they're starting down 1-0.
And it's a mental gap that is not only limited to the players, because the United States has beaten Mexico before. And we go back to the Dos a Cero and all that conversation. It has happened before, but there's always been, at least from the Mexican media perspective, this sort of arrogance, like, every once in a while. Mm. Now, if you hear the Mexican media talk about their own national team, they're actually talking from the perspective of, we expect to be dominated by the United States. That narrative has changed. It used to be that they wouldn't really take the United States seriously. It was like, if the United States won, it was more because of a refereeing call, or maybe it was a poor performance from Mexico, but it wasn't the credit of the United States. Now the Mexican media are kind of like, they are better than us. They're better than us, and consistently better than us. And so that gap, I don't think, is getting any shorter, because, by the way, if you're a player and you feel the way that you just said, that you just described, and now you're being fed by the media all the time and the fans all the time that you cannot be the United States, you can't be the U.S., you cannot be the U.S., you can't be the U.S., you're not good enough to do it, guess what? You begin to believe it. And when you begin to believe it, as he just mentioned, you show up to the game with a deficit.
Yeah. All right, so let's change the narrative then. El Tri players, you're all very good. You all play in the Premier League. You're all great, and you can compete with the United States. How about that? The media is helping the Mexican national team here. We started this talking about PSV. Of course, you can watch the Eredivisie on ESPN+. You can also watch the German Cup on ESPN+. We're down to the semifinals. Bayer Leverkusen chasing trophies all over the place. They're taking on Fortuna Dusseldorf Wednesday, coverage starting at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time here on ESPN Plus, in Spanish on ESPN Deportes, and on television as well over on ESPNU. Let's talk some Major League Soccer. When you talk MLS, you got to start with Inter Miami, who drew at home against New York City FC over the weekend in a game they played without Lionel Messi. Now, the rest of the crew was there. Jordi Alba, Sergio Busquets, and the man you just saw score a goal in the 14th minute, Luis Suarez. That goal put Inter Miami up 1-0, but New York City would equalize 20 minutes later, and that's how the game would end. Miami's record on the season, 3 wins, 2 draws, 2 losses. They've got 11 points, which is still good enough for second place in the Eastern Conference. However, Ale, this is the 4th MLS regular season game that Lionel Messi has missed, and it's April 1st. The season just started. So we have a segment on this show called Something, Nothing, or Everything. If it's a big deal, it's everything. If it's a non-deal, it's nothing. Ale, something, nothing, or everything. Lionel Messi missing 4 regular season games already for Inter Miami.
It's something. It is something. I'm not going to deny the fact that it's something that is concerning. It's something that I imagine Tata Martino and his staff would have probably suspected could potentially happen. Lionel Messi has a whole lot of miles in those legs. And at some point, these things begin to show up. The MLS season, as you know, said, is not very forgiving. And it's only going to get tougher as you get into the summer months. And it's only going to get hotter in Miami and everywhere else, for that matter, but particularly in Miami. And so you begin to wonder, how are those legs going to recover? And what is realistic for Lionel Messi in terms of playing Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, if indeed that's what's required from him? And what is realistic to expect from him if he ends up going to Copa America with Argentina, which is what we all suspect? Which also tells me that maybe, just maybe, he is taking care of himself, looking ahead to that. To Copa America, to be at his best and the best fitness possible going into that tournament. What does that mean for Inter Miami? I imagine that what that means is that if he has to sacrifice a game, it's going to be an Inter Miami game. It wouldn't be an Argentina game in Copa America. And so it's something. I don't think we can ignore it. And it's a significant number of matches that he has missed already. And it makes a difference, obviously. Obviously, it doesn't, the cutting edge analysis here. When Messi's on the field, Luis Suarez is a better player. Sergio Busquets is a better player. Inter Miami is a better team. Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And when he's not, then there's some limitations to some of the things they can do in the attack.
I mean, it's got to be everything from, like, the off-field perspective, right? Because we see what happens in Fort Lauderdale when Inter Miami plays these games. Even when he's in the game, Ale, if he gets subbed out, people leave the stadium, right? And that's not fans of other teams in theory. Those are Inter Miami fans, and they don't even stick around when he's not there. So if you're not going to take him to these MLS games, you know, you're losing that opportunity in these major markets. And if you're a fan who's, you know, paid the ticket ahead of time, you're obviously very disappointed. From a competitive standpoint, though, Ale, I got to say it's kind of nothing. And that's not to say that Lionel Messi isn't a massive factor for Inter Miami, but it's to question really the value of the MLS regular season. With everything else going on, Leagues Cup, CONCACAF Champions Cup, which we know is coming up this week, there's just so many other things that I think are more important, not just to Inter Miami, but probably to Lionel Messi as well. They don't need to win the MLS regular season. There's no real prize for that. Nobody really cares about the supporter shield. They're going to slide their way into the playoff. And so I don't think it's really that big a deal. Where you kind of get into it is, what do you do if you're Tata Martino? What do you do if you're the other guys? Because you basically, Ale, you have two teams here, right? You're fighting two teams. What your team looks like with Lionel Messi, and then how do you survive without him? And yeah, they got through this past weekend 1-1 against New York City. But go back the weekend before. He wasn't there, man. And they got absolutely hammered by the New York Red Bulls. So there are some instances here. You can go back to the loss against Montreal as well about a month and a half ago, where Inter Miami doesn't just, you know, not win without Lionel Messi, but Ale, they like genuinely look bad.
Yeah, and the reason I don't say everything is because actually, it's to solidify your point about the importance or lack thereof of the regular season. So that's why, and I can only attest to what happens on the field. Off the field, I think the impact of Lionel Messi goes beyond the metrics and whatever that we can explain here in this show. It's also a byproduct of MLS and Inter Miami building everything on the Lionel Messi stage. So if he's not on the stage, then all of those things kind of lose value and lose credibility. You're building everything around Lionel Messi, people are going to come and watch Lionel Messi. If Lionel Messi's not there, then people are not watching. And that's sort of the dynamics that you have built when you have said it's the Messi show and everybody else is just a sideshow. In terms of what happens on the field, it's not everything. Yeah, because you have to imagine that eventually Inter Miami will get just enough points to certainly make it into the playoff and be a factor in the playoff. And so if you're Tata Martino, you know this league well, you kind of go, all right, what do we sacrifice? And that's what I was sort of alluding to earlier. What's really important to Inter Miami? Is it CONCACAF Champions Cup? Is it Leagues Cup? What is it that they're really focusing on and what's important? What is the shortest path to a trophy as well? Which is something that you can sell if you're Inter Miami. If we're talking about one-offs, Lionel Messi being healthy for the one-offs is far more convenient than Lionel Messi being healthy for a long stretch of games in MLS. Honestly, these are decisions that Inter Miami are going to have to make as a club, but more importantly, that Tata Martino is going to have to make as a coach with his staff and with Lionel Messi, because I imagine that no decision is made without Messi's input. And there, so, hey, how are you feeling? What can you do? You want to play today? You want to play tomorrow? What do you prefer? He's reached that level in his career where he's making those decisions alongside the coach, in this case, Tata Martino, and Messi's very much part of those decisions. When we talk about coaches' decisions in Inter Miami, yeah, it's coach's decision, but Messi's right there.
All right, so there we have it. Lionel Messi missing his fourth straight MLS game as Inter Miami settles for a 1-1 draw against New York City FC on the weekend. Let's talk some LA Galaxy. Ale, one of your former employers. They beat the Seattle Sounders over the weekend to remain unbeaten and actually move into first place in the Western Conference. Final score was 1-0. Actually, the first clean sheet of the season for the Galaxy. Gabriel Beck right there with the goal 4 minutes in. Three wins, three draws across six games for the Galaxy for 12 points, tops in the West. Remember, this is a team that finished 13th out of 14 in the Western Conference a year ago. Ale, it's been a quick but exceptional turnaround from the LA Galaxy. Are you buying it, keeping in mind that we are just about a month into the MLS regular season?
Yeah, but I do think it's important. And beyond whatever the LA Galaxy end up doing this season, I think bigger picture, MLS is a far more interesting product when the LA Galaxy are doing well. Just let's somehow project this into other sports and compare what the LA Galaxy are to MLS in other sports. If you think about the NFL, I think we can agree that maybe the LA Galaxy equates to perhaps the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys are always sort of part of the news, regardless of whether they win or they lose. But it's far more interesting when they're in the playoffs. And it's far more interesting when they are the subject of conversation. And that's exactly what I'm talking about here with the LA Galaxy. It's the same thing with the New York Yankees in baseball. If you have your major, big, huge name franchises playing at a high level, they are going to create far more interesting story and storylines. And they're going to attract a whole lot more of attention because the name of the LA Galaxy carries some weight in MLS. LA Galaxy being 13th out of 14 teams in the Western Conference does nothing for Major League Soccer. And I'm only talking about big picture, and I'm not talking about the LA Galaxy specifically. In the big picture of MLS, you need the LA Galaxy to be playing at a high level, to be competitive, and to be indeed a rival to LAFC, not just in name, but in performances on the field. And we'll see if indeed this start by the LA Galaxy is for real, because they play LAFC this weekend.
I'm buying it. I'm buying it as much as you can buy something at this time of the year for the LA Galaxy. Like, they look good. They spent the money. The guys that they spent the money on are playing well. If you go line by line, they're much more solid in defense. Brought in a couple of former Japanese internationals to help out. Ricky Puig is obviously playing very well. There's moments, Ale, where he looks like, you know, one of the best players in the league. Marky Delgado's doing really well in midfield. And they get this win with Dejan Jovetic, who's got five goals and has been everything that Chicharito wasn't for this team, not starting the game. So we're seeing some depth as well from the LA Galaxy. I'm with you, though. There seems to have been a point where the LA Galaxy LAFC conversation went from like this to the LA Galaxy falling way behind and almost only being about LAFC. I think this is maybe a moment for the LA Galaxy to get back, not just at LAFC, but speaking of the team that they beat this weekend, Seattle, the West is not what it used to be. There's a space now for the LA Galaxy to kind of move up in the pecking order as some of the teams that used to be atop the West fall off. So I'm loving what I'm seeing from the Galaxy. And Ale, I know as an ex-Galaxy guy, you're loving it too.
Well, yeah, I think it's important. But I like to be a little bit more cautious with this sort of conversation, given the fact that we're so early in the season. I would like to see from the LA Galaxy that there, you just talk about every line. Defensively, I still think there are some concerns here. And this is a team that gives away a lot of chances, and that has given up goals this season. You just mentioned that this was, this past weekend was the first time this season that they didn't allow any goals against the Seattle Sounders, first shutout of the season. If indeed they're going to be the team that we're suggesting they can potentially be, defensively, they're going to have to improve so that that matches some of the things that they've been doing offensively. And if they put that together, then we're talking about an LA Galaxy team that can occupy the space that you're talking about. There is a gap there in the Western Conference, and the LA Galaxy can certainly take advantage of it. But I want more consistency defensively, which we haven't always seen.
Right now, no gap as they sit first place in the Western Conference. All right, one more thing about MLS, Sale. There's always something crazy. Epic goal or epic fail? Colorado Rapids, LAFC. Jordy Mihailovic scoring on Hugo Lloris. You giving credit to the goal scorer, or we blaming a goalie?
Well, I tell you what the true answer here is. Neither. It's neither an epic goal or an epic fail. It's well taken by Jordy Mihailovic, and Hugo Lloris certainly could have and should have done better. I wouldn't call it an epic fail. He's just kind of guessing, kind of taking a step to his right. By the time he sees the ball, it's way well past him. The true answer is neither. Give credit to the attacking player. But if you're LAFC and you get a guy like Hugo Lloris in goal, you are hoping that he's not making the sort of mistake that would allow this goal to go in.
There it is. All right, Ale, don't go far. We'll be back with you in just a second to talk some USL. Good time to remind folks we got Copa del Rey, the final. Athletic Club against Mallorca, Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Coverage starts right here on ESPN+. Don't miss it. What a weekend it was in the NWSL as match day three gave us a little bit of everything. The one thing it definitely gave us was tons of goals. San Diego, Kansas City, North Carolina, Houston, and my beloved Washington Spirit all ending up in the win column. Chicago and Orlando played to a tie, but big moment there for Chicago as Mallory Swanson gets her first goal after a long injury layoff. For more on week three, thrilled to welcome into the studio for the first time, Ale Krieger. Great to be in person one-on-one.
I know. This is so nice to be here and talk NWSL. I love it.
I know this is not your first trip to the Bristol campus, but what do you think of it?
I feel at home here. I think every time I show up, there's something new. There's
beautiful.
A new facelift going on.
Absolutely. Yeah, we do. We're always upgrading here, especially when you show up. We know we got to be at our very best. So let's get into the best of the last week in the NWSL. And we'll start with the match of the week. There was actually quite a few options for this one. I thought production was going to go maybe with Angel City, Kansas City. But then I remembered that there are a lot of Angel City fans in production, so they were probably pretty bitter. Instead, we're going Bay FC Houston. It was 1-1 in the 87th minute when Diana Ordonez scores this goal to put Houston up 2-1, Ale.
Yeah, this was obviously a great rebound too, and for her to recognize that she needed to do that to put the ball away and ultimately win the game for them was excellent. Bay FC, you know, having their home opener and the crowd that they had, the environment, that just motivates them to want to continue down this path that they are. Unfortunately, they didn't get the win, but it didn't stop the fans being that excited about, you know, being in this environment and really excited for soccer in the Bay Area.
Rachel Gundananji's debut goal for Bay FC to tie it at 2-2, canceled out there by the late goal from Havana Salon, the Jamaican international. In the 10th minute, Ale, of added time there, getting it done for the Houston Dash. For Gundananji, we knew coming into this, like, big transfer fee, and you want to see it pay off. I think that goal we start to see, she's probably worth it, right?
Absolutely. And you want these players who have that big price tag to come in and perform just like the expectations that they have from everyone else. And so it's really, really encouraging to see how well that, you know, she's doing and performing, and it's only going to get better. This is only week three. This is so exciting for the league, so exciting for the NWSL clubs to have these type of players and for the fans and supporters. It's so great to buy tickets, to show up to a game, and to see some of the best players in the world play.
So Rachel Gundananji probably has a shout for player of the week. Diana Ordonez, who had a brace in that game, definitely has a shout for player of the week. But we got to give our players of the week. So Ale, why don't we get into it here? Who is your player of the week for match day three?
I feel like Emily Van Eggman actually just showed up in the very end of the San Diego game, and I was really happy that, you know, against Seattle, that she was able to find the back of the net. I do value Emily. I played with her. I think she's a great center midfielder who demands the ball, is very calm and cool and collected. She did have a few other chances within the game. They are going to be a team to beat in this league. And unfortunately, yes, last weekend it didn't go their way, but this weekend they came out with a win. I thought that, you know, you can clearly see the identity and the purpose in this team and how they're moving forward in these first few weeks. And so I was actually really happy for her to get this, because that is very difficult in a pressure moment in that time of the game to get the job done and to ultimately win for San Diego.
Yeah, and obviously San Diego won the Challenge Cup, but this is their first regular season win of the year. Big defeat there for Seattle as they fall to 11th in the table. You've gone Emily Van Eggman. Fair play there. I'm going a little different. I'm going back to Kansas City because this team just scores goals and goals and goals and goals. And this time it was Temwa Chawinga. So this is a player who you're watching a game and she just jumps off the screen. Had a goal and an assist in the 4-2 win over Angel City. Ali, you and I were both in Kansas City for the season opener. And she came in the game as a sub in the second half. And within like 2 to 3 minutes of coming on the field, there were goal chances, and I think even a goal in that game for Kansas City that came off of her hard work and her athleticism. She is explosive, and I think even the most athletic players in this very athletic league, Allie, are going to have a tough time keeping up with her. And I know it's early days, but to me, she's got to be in the conversation for like that signing of the offseason, even considering, Allie, how many great signings we've had so far.
For sure. Seeing her impact the game right from the beginning this time around was so incredible. I mean, she creates so much. She has so many opportunities, and she puts a lot of her opportunities on target. And she's just a player that wants to be on the ball, and she has that confidence that you can tell she wants to carry the team, and she wants to get into the attack. And she's someone who can be an answer, and that impact player that Kansas City needs. And obviously they've been doing so well, and we spoke about that. She just came on and added that spark in the first game of the season, but now she's really made it difficult for them to ignore her, to you know, not leave her out of the starting 11. And we saw that this weekend, and it's incredible to see the players, how they react around her, and how I feel like she's setting other players up for success just because of how intense and how confident she is. And then DiBernardo, I mean, we can't forget that goal that she had off of her assist. Was really incredible.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the Chawinga angle here, and I'm thinking if you're a defender, right, and you've been dealing with 80 minutes, 70 minutes, another player, and she comes in off the bench, it's probably the last thing that you want to see, right? All right, let's get into the power rankings, a series that we debuted last week here on Football Americas. We're going to start at the bottom here. Production's choice. So give us your bottom three right now in the NWSL, according to Ali Krieger's power rankings.
Well, my bottom three, I think are obvious to maybe some fans and supporters. They haven't had the start, I'm sure, that, you know, they won it at the beginning of the season. It's a long season. But my bottom three for this week was Portland, Angel City, obviously, and then Utah. And, you know, these three teams, they do have potential. Obviously, Portland is the most winning team in the NWSL. Angel City, you have the best support and backing in the league regarding, you know, support within the club and how much money they can have and what type of players that they can attract just because of the city that they're in and the support. And so, you know, and the run last year towards the end of the year was really nice. And so you felt like they were going to build off of that. So it is unfortunate to see these teams, you know, towards the bottom of the table. Utah, obviously they're new, you know, they're young. It's A-Rod's first season as a head coach. Yes, they do play good football, and you have good potential within the squads, but they really have to start turning it around in order to get and move up the table and start getting points, because it will be very difficult for them to succeed if they don't start, you know, taking points moving into the next week.
So Utah's got some points on the board and a win. Portland, Angel City haven't won yet. Louisville hasn't won yet. Orlando hasn't won yet. There's been a lot of ties and a lot of teams that maybe early on seem like they haven't quite figured out that winning formula. What about the top? Give us the best three in the NWSL, according to Ali Krieger right now.
Obviously, Kansas City.
You got to start there, right?
They've been so impressive. You could see a clear identity. You could see the team just defending well together, attacking well. They're good on transition. They have an idea. They have purpose in and around the box. Their shots are just always on target, or most times on target. I've seen very few shots that haven't been on target for them. And then they're constantly wanting the rebounds. And there's so many different players who have been goal scorers. Mm-hmm. And so you could tell that a lot of their players are participating and helping with the team win. And then Chicago Red Stars, obviously, Mal coming back has really ignited the team, especially from last year. I think Sam Staub and Alyssa Nair being in the back to really control that defense and really organize and keep the team consistent and confident back there has been good. And they're very compact. They're so good on transition. They have really good attacking players. And the opportunities that they're creating in front of goal, they're ultimately on target and scoring them. And now Mal, obviously, getting that goal on the weekend hopefully will build confidence for the next game. And then North Carolina beating Gotham, that was definitely a tough task because Gotham is a very strong team. They have so much depth. They have the firepower this year that they've received in the offseason. But North Carolina and Ashley Sanchez moving there, I think, was really a good choice for Sean Nahas to bring her in and to really kind of be that creator in there, which was maybe a missing link last year in the attack for them. And, yeah, I think they're going to be really difficult to beat and a contender for, you know, the top six of the table most of the year.
There you have it. Kansas City current off to a great start. The one thing is they've given up a lot of goals, 7 goals allowed through those first 3 games. So something for sure for Vlatko Andonovski to work on there. So we've gone through the bottom 3 and the top 3 of Ali's power rankings. Now we need the top 5 goals from the weekend, where, of course, we start at number 5 from that Portland-Louisville game. Uchenna Kanu, this is one of 2 goals for the Nigerian international, Ali.
Yeah, and it's very difficult back to goal to receive a ball like this and to turn and beat a defender with this touch and just quick trigger. I think she got the ball out under her feet enough, but then was a quick trigger far post. And to keep it low past the goalkeeper is what, you know, forwards definitely have to try to do, because, you know, anything higher is really easy for a goalkeeper to save.
Kanu, of course, ex-Tigres down in Liga MX Femenil. Number 4 to that Kansas City-Angel City game. Alexa Spanstra here in the 4-2 win for Kansas City.
Yes, great ball across just to see that back post run. Was able to get enough, you know, height on it, enough weight on it to get it to far post. And obviously to have a player backside be able to finish this, obviously the defending definitely needs to be better from LAFC. But they were able to get that goal, and it was brilliant.
Good team goal at number 4 here. Number 3, back to BFC Houston, Dana Castellanos.
I mean, that shot, I feel like is, you know, once every season. You know, 9 times out of 10, doubt that she'd be able to do that. This was just such great focus, upper 90. Wanted to get it on frame, just hit it well. It's kind of like that soft spot. After you hit a ball like this, you know it's going in. And she's been excellent for them so far.
Where's Ale Moreno when you need him? Vamos, Venezuela, for Dana Castellanos. Same game here at number 2. And it is that golazo from Rachel Kundananji living up to the hype.
I mean, the vision that she saw on this, just obviously the defending, the defender and center back needs to get tighter. You can't leave a forward like that with that much space and what she's good at. You know, she's just going to bend it around the goalkeeper, side netting. Great vision, great focus there. And obviously technical ability was on point.
All right, so what's it going to take to be number 1 in match day 3 in the NWSL? How about this? Sam Coffey to make it 2-2 late.
It reminds me of watching her in her Penn State days, getting in and around.
Oh, hey, Penn State shout out there.
In and around the 18, and when I'd go to the games, I'd be like, this girl has it. She is going to be big time. And, you know, big players like her make big plays in big games. They needed this. I think that was a boost for them in the end to get the point. She had excellent vision there and just went for it and went to the back of the net, and I'm really proud of her.
9th minute of stoppage time. I'm telling you, we had some late drama this weekend in the NWSL. Let's go overseas now, Ali, because one of the big talking points around world football in the last couple days has been what happened in the FA WSL Cup final between Arsenal and Chelsea. Now, Arsenal won thanks to a goal from Stina Blackstenius. That name will give U.S. fans a little bit of nightmares, the Swedish forward there. But shout out to Emily Fox, who wins the trophy here. It's a player whose position, Ali, you know well. What do you think of Fox?
Yeah, she's brilliant. She's young. She's talented. She's gaining experience playing in these games and in this type of atmosphere. I mean, you can't complain. This is amazing. This is a huge trophy for her in her career. And then, obviously...
Here's the incident. Yeah, so Emma Hayes... after the game, would have to explain kind of what happened here. But basically, there's an incident between the Arsenal manager, Jonas Eidvall, and some of the Chelsea players. And there you see Hayes upset afterwards. Let's hear what she had to say.
Listen, I think there's a way to conduct yourself on the touchline. I really do. And I think that it's absolutely essential we role model in the right way. But I'm not down for male aggression on the touchline. I'm not. And fronting up with players, for me, that's unacceptable. And, yeah, I was disappointed. And I told Jonas that. I don't think it's okay to behave like that. He got a yellow card, and, in fact, he probably should have been sent off. I'm all for competing to win. I've never been booked in 12 years, you know, my time here. I totally accept he's a winner and he wants to win, but his behaviour on the touchline wasn't acceptable.
I don't see it as a big thing. I definitely don't see me as aggressive in that situation. I think that's very irresponsible, putting that label onto it. The argument that we had was before the game, if both clubs agree to play a multiple system, the Conte Cup final will be played with a multiple system. At that incident that happens, the ball gets kicked away and Chelsea wants to take a new ball and to throw a quick throw in. And I said, you guys wanted to play with one ball, now you need to get that ball. I think there is definitely a way that you behave in the technical area to it. I also think there is a way you behave after the game, being a good winner, but you also need to be a good loser. You need to be responsible in both those situations to it. And I'm actually happy with the way I conduct myself. And then others need to look at themselves in the mirror and see if they're happy with themselves.
All right, Ali. So obviously this has grabbed headlines around the world. What do you make of the whole situation?
Obviously, they both want to win. They're competitors. It was, you know, some tough moments there because you're fighting for, you know, a trophy. And I think I can see both sides. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can't really tell here. I think it's just, I didn't know the ball situation at the beginning of the game. I do think a player going up to a coach like that is also, you know, unacceptable. I do know there's a way to conduct yourself, but also she doesn't need to push him either after saying that you have to conduct yourself a certain way. I agree with Emma. I'm glad she spoke up about that. And if that's how she felt, mm-hmm. obviously you want to express that and make sure that that's known. Yeah, for Arsenal, I feel like, you know, it is what it is. They won. Yeah, he can definitely take a look at his behavior and maybe, you know, try to be better next time. I don't think you should be yelling at players. I don't think you should be pushing coaches. I don't think you should be, you know, I think the respect needs to be there for players, coaches, refs, staff members, ball, boys and girls. Everyone deserves that. And, you know, you have to conduct yourself, like they said, in a professional way. And I don't know if either side really ended up doing that at the end of the day.
There you have it. Emma Hayes in charge of Chelsea for now, but just months away from taking over the U.S. Women's National Team. As always, Ali, great to have you this time with us in studio. We'll see you next week here on Football Americas.
Thank you.
Let's talk some USL as we hit week 4 in the American Lower League season. We'll start in the Eastern Conference of the Championship, where Louisville City FC and Detroit City both stayed perfect. Louisville 5-0 winners. They hammered Birmingham. Detroit a little bit closer as they won 2-1 over Indy 11. Danny Cruz's team has just been outstanding. Louisville 3-0-0 with a +8 goal differential. As for Detroit City, it's been more of a grind. 3 straight 2-1 wins, but they all count the same. By the way, Louisville playing Indy on a big CBS this weekend. In the Western Conference, we got a logjam, a 3-way tie for first with Orange County, Sacramento Republic, and San Antonio. All three winning over the weekend. Orange County 1-0 over FC Tulsa. San Antonio 2-1 over Monterey Bay, who suffered their first loss of the season, and Sacramento 1-0 over Memphis 901. That's the good news. There is also some bad news in the championship. The defending champs, Phoenix Rising FC, suffering a third loss in four games to kick off the campaign after falling to New Mexico United over the weekend 1-0. Phoenix, who were at home, mounted just one shot on target in the defeat. Okay, Ale, before we let you out of here, let's do some top goals USL style. We'll start in League One. Greenville triumph. How about that from Ben Zukowski?
It's a little bit of feels, I give you that much, at the near post. Creative, resourceful finish. We're not going to talk about the optional defending at the near post. Regardless, this is all about the finish, and the finish was beautiful. Phil, some would say, and by some I mean me.
Greenville triumph. Do just that. 3-2 winners over Lexington over the weekend. To the championship for number two, Carter Manley. He's a DC kid, so you know he's got it in him. San Antonio, 2-1 winners over Monterey Bay.
So being a DC kid means that you have it. What happened to you, Seth?
Don't do that to me, Ale.
What?
Focus
what
on Carter.
What happened to you? But by the way, is this a Juan Agudelo sighting? Is Juan Agudelo playing for San Antonio? Yes, he is.
That goal just 7 minutes into the game. A fast start there. Number one, League One, Angelo Kelly Rosales of One Knoxville against South Georgia Tormenta.
Okay, now we're talking. See, now we're cooking. Now we're cooking. The last one is all right, but this one is some kind of great. You cannot hit a ball any better than this. Laces through the ball, courtesy dive, never getting there. Even the guy celebrating the stance is getting excited and putting his hands up. Beautifully done.
Not just a goal, a game winner there. And by the way, Greenville and Knoxville, who we just saw highlights of, will play on Wednesday in the Open Cup. So how about that in the second round? All right, Ale, we got to let you go. But as always, thanks for the time and appreciate you joining us here on Football Americas.
Well, thank you, sir. Thanks for having me. Don't make it a regular thing, but thanks for having me anyway.
If you want Ale as a regular thing, make sure to check out ESPN FC. It is available 7 days a week here on ESPN. Plus, the crew is live 5 p.m. Eastern time on the weekends, 6 p.m. Eastern time on weekdays. Time to check in on our friends north of the border. The Canadian Premier League season starting in just about 2 weeks' time. Today, we're focused on York United, first team to join the CPL back in 2018. Late last year, they were sold to Game Plan Sports, an investment group with lots of ties to Mexico. Three brothers at the middle of it, Eduardo, Ricardo, and Miguel Pasquel, their uncle, a president of Club America back in their day, their dad, a longstanding official in the Mexican Soccer Federation, and Ricardo, who's the president of York United, joins us now. Ricardo, great to have you with us on Football Americas. Welcome to the show.
Sebastian, thanks for having me.
All right, so let's dive into the why. Anytime we actually get to the people with the money, I want to know why. You've obviously got lots of places, even in the soccer world, where you could invest your money. What specifically attracted you to the Canadian Premier League?
Well, a bunch of things, but I can summarize in the evolution Canada soccer has made in the last 10 years. I think you have been able to judge how Canada has grown, especially the national team, right? The last 8-6 years. And it's a no-brainer for us, knowing Canada, what can Canada become soccer-wise in down the road, 3-5 years down the road. So very excited for the opportunity.
And obviously, when you're looking at teams around the CPL, there are a lot of options. You chose the Toronto market, which does have a team already there, Toronto FC with MLS. What took you to Toronto?
Actually, it's a good question. Very long story short, about a year ago, when we first contacted the CPL, it was for a potential ninth team. And the league does a very good job of, they have an expansion plan. And they took up for about a month and a half to some cities, a potential city for a ninth team. And then York United became available. And they said, well, would you be interested in York United, which is based in Toronto, instead of exploring our ninth option that we are talking to about? So for us, it was a no-brainer about the potential future the team has on it, and that's how we started.
You know, here in the United States, we've seen it tough for two teams to coexist in the same market. What do you think the relationship will be like now that you're in charge with Toronto FC, and what are the challenges there of having two teams in the same space?
Honestly, I don't see TFC as a competitor. I mean, you can see it around the world. You can see it in London, in Buenos Aires, in Mexico, in Madrid, how they have up to 5, 6, 7 teams in the same city. It doesn't even have to be the same division, right? The same category. It can be different categories. So here in Toronto and the GTA area, there are more about 6 to 7 million people. So I think there's room not just for 2 teams, potentially down the road 3 or maybe even 4.
Ricardo, help me out here, because I believe you and your family have quite a few connections to Rayados, right? So you know how business works kind of in Liga MX. What are the differences from a business standpoint if we compare Liga MX to the Canadian Premier League and where the CPL is right now?
I mean, like, the CPL has only had, what, I think 3 full years, taking away the 2 of pandemic, right? So it's in some sort of way, it's a baby league. But at the same time, those 3 years, they have grown tremendously. They have some similarities, but at the same time, a bunch of difference, right? Having a salary cap in here, being only 8 teams right now. Obviously it's soccer at the end of the day, but I think there's a bright future in the CPL. And having only 3 years of existence, what it can become down the road, I think it just excites everybody.
What do you think of the level of play? How does it compare to Major League Soccer or Liga MX?
Honestly, I'm quite surprised. Again, this is a league that has a salary cap, just as what the MLS started, 25, 30 years ago. They had more or less a minimum salary cap, and we do have that right now. Having said that, I think the quality of play, especially from the young guys, I've been amused. I've been really happy with the quality and knowing what these 17, 18, 19-year-old kids can become 3, 4 years down the road. It's very exciting, and it has surprised me a lot, to be honest.
Well, what's the goal? As a team, as a league, is it to catch MLS? Is it to catch Liga MX? Is it to compete in CONCACAF Champions Cup? I'd imagine, you see some of the other teams in the CPL and the CONCACAF Champions Cup, and that's got to be a big goal for you guys at York United.
Yeah, I think all of them. I mean, potentially we have to be on the CPL awards, 2 teams to go to the CONCACAF Championship. And there's also the Canadian Championship, which the winner of the Canadian Championship with this year, I think it was Vancouver, or the previous year, also goes to the CONCACAF tournament. So that's a pretty big objective of ours. At the same time, the investment group, we want to focus much on working with young Canadian talent, right? I think the talent is here. We just have to do a good job of scouting them, developing them. And so they can come soccer stars down the road.
All right, you're talking about the young talent. I know there's a lot there, but if there's one way to get eyeballs on a product when it comes to soccer, it is star power. Do you think there's ever going to be a day, maybe not too far off in the distant future, where the CPL is doing some of what we see with Major League Soccer and bringing some big name stars, even if it is maybe at the back end of their career, to Canada?
Yeah, I think it's going to be exactly what the same what the MLS did previously. If you remember, the MLS at the beginning, they had a salary cap, and then it became the David Beckham rule, where Beckham came to the MLS, and that was the exemption of having one player that doesn't count against salary cap. So I'm guessing in the not too long future, we're going to do the same thing. Again, just working on some of the logistics of what that's going to be, but I think pretty soon you're going to hear that from us.
Awesome. Sounds good. Lots to look forward to there in the Canadian Premier League. You guys open up on April 13th against Atletico Ottawa. Good luck, and great to have you here on the show, Ricardo. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
CPL, NWSL, USL, MLS. What are we missing? MASL. How about our boy Marco Fabian? He has won the MASL Golden Boot, or at least a share of it, while playing for the Empire Strikers. He scored a hat trick over the weekend. That gives him 35 goals for the season, tied with Kansas City's Zach Reggett for the league lead. That was the good news for the Empire Strikers. The bad news, is that they miss out on the MASL playoffs, the indoor postseason kicking off on Friday. I encourage you to get to a game near you if you can. Nothing quite like indoor soccer for some great entertainment. Speaking of great entertainment, this coming week is also the second round of the U.S. Open Cup. And you know we love the Open Cup here on Football America, so if you can watch a game, do so. If you can go to a game, even better, you absolutely should. We'll be talking about the U.S. Open Cup on Thursday's edition of Football America. We will also be talking about the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Inter Miami, of course, getting ready to face off against Rayados. That should be a great game. And of course, on Thursday, we'll also be talking about the women's game. Part two of our sit-down interview with Sophia Smith. Good primer ahead of the She Believes Cup, which kicks off this weekend. For everybody involved in today's edition of Football Americas, thanks for watching. We'll see you on Thursday.